That was
weird. That caused confusion.
Oh, precious boy.
Well, hello everyone. Welcome. This is the third emergency stream I have done on this topic in recent days. That is because this is quite a big story, possibly an epoch-defining story, depending on how things go. And the question on everybody's lips is this one. Is Keir Starmer trying to start World War III? I'm going to look through four different theories over the course of this stream, ladies and gentlemen. And we're going to see where it takes us. As with the other two emergency streams that I did, I have a cigar in hand. Today, it is a Romeo and Julieta Mille Fleurs. Again, good sort of cigar to have mid-afternoon, early evening sort of time. And that is what, you know, nothing too heavy. Nothing to, you know, nice little light petite Corona here. The Romeo and Julieta Mille Fleurs. Now, before we get going, as people are trickling in, I might as well remind everybody about the courses. In fact, I haven't set up Entropy. Let me do that now. And I actually have a special sale just for today on academic agency courses, 25% off all courses, but just for today. It's not actually the start of a sale here. It's just for today. Why? Well, if I'm honest, it's because I started playing around. I've become like slightly obsessed with this clip of Peter Mandelson, and I started playing around with it earlier on, and then I was like, why don't I set it to some dark synth? And then I just kind of like, well, it took off from there. I was like, well, I might as well use it now. I've made it. So let's just have a one-off sale. So 25% off all courses just for this one show. Promo code Mandy. When the show ends, the promo code won't work anymore. So if you're going to buy it, if you're going to use it, you have to use it in this hour, 2 hours. But anyway, here's what I came up with here. Promo code Mandy.
Country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
Promo code Mandy. 25% off all courses. Come on down, Academic Agency. Every single course, 25% off. Promo code Mandy.
Country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
Oh, I don't know. Sometimes I was meant to be making an actual video, and I just kind of got obsessed with doing that. That's how it goes sometimes. But anyway, have 25% off any course you want, including the Shakespeare one. All right. So now, before we get going, before I present these four theories, I think it's worth listening to what the Prime Minister has said in full, as well as watching some of the rather weird videos he's putting out at the moment. It's all getting a little bit strange. So let's have a little watch of the Prime Minister.
First, we will keep the military aid flowing and keep increasing the economic pressure on Russia to strengthen Ukraine now. Second, we agreed that any lasting peace must ensure Ukraine's sovereignty and security. And Ukraine must be at the table. Third, in the event of a peace deal, we will keep boosting Ukraine's own defensive capabilities to deter any future invasion. Fourth, we will go further to develop a coalition of the willing to defend a deal in Ukraine. and to guarantee the peace. Not every nation will feel able to contribute, but that can't mean that we sit back. Instead, those willing will intensify planning now with real urgency. The UK is prepared to back this with boots on the ground and planes in the air, together with others.
I hope you heard what you just said there, because the volume is a bit loud, or a bit quiet on this. But he said the UK is willing to back this with boots on the ground and planes in the air. Direct quote, Keir Starmer. Let's carry on.
Europe must do the heavy lifting. But to support peace in our continent and to succeed, this effort must have strong US backing. We're working with the US on this point after my meeting with President Trump last week. And let me be clear, we agree with the President on the urgent need for a durable peace. Now we need to deliver together. Finally, we agreed that leaders will meet again very soon to keep the pace behind these actions.
Yes, the coalition of the willing is going to meet again, and Putin is going to face the full force of the law.
Now, before we get to the four theories in the name of this stream, we have to take a little look at the mental videos that Starmer has been uploading to his own Twitter feed. What concerned me quite a lot, friends, if I'm honest, is that since he became Prime Minister, Keir Starmer has been relentlessly, and I mean relentlessly, ratioed on Twitter. No matter what he said, he was ratioed. These tweets with these videos that he's putting out are not being ratioed. They're getting upwards of 40 and 50,000 likes. And that is a little bit disturbing. Ukraine is one of those things where all of us lot are quite out on a limb, and a lot of normies and NPCs, like our hook, line and sinker, they're with the Tory boys, and they're with Keir Starmer, and they're with, you know, it's a little bit like COVID. It's a little bit like one of those issues where the propaganda has been so thick, so relentless, and so little dissent has been allowed on UK Pravda, which is our media here, normies are really quite bad on this issue. With that comes a certain irrationality, like you can't talk any sense into them on this issue either. Anyway, let us play some of these videos that Starmer's been putting out.
The priority of this government, of any government, is the security and safety of the British people, to defend the national interest.
Sorry to pause it already, but look, go back here. What is that silhouette from the back? What are they evoking, Boomer Truth fans? It is the spirit of Churchill. We're going to get bloody Arnold Rimmer as Churchill now. This is what they're giving us.
Security and safety of the British people, to defend the national interest, particularly in these volatile times. That's why last week I announced the biggest sustained increase in defence spending since the Cold War. That's also why I met President Trump last week, to strengthen our relationship with America, and indispensable partners in defence and security. And it's why this weekend I've been hosting European leaders here in London to work together for the security of the United Kingdom, Ukraine, and Europe as a whole. We are at a crossroads in history today. This is not a moment for more talk. It's time to act, time to step up and lead, and to unite around a new plan for a just and enduring peace.
Fucking hell. Now I'm telling you, folks, right? I went and, as I often do, when I go and fill up my car in petrol, or when I go to like a corner store or something, I often just take a little look at the newspaper stand just to see how everybody's covering this. I looked at the front pages this morning, and literally every single paper is 100% backing Starmer, and their framing is even worse. their framing is Keir Starmer takes the lead in negotiating the peace, right? They're framing Starmer as the peace bringer. Okay. Now, when I talked about Pravda or George Orwell or North Korea, remember, war is peace, freedom is slavery, and all of that, right? I mean, like, he is talking about putting boots on the ground and acting and not talking, right? Increasing military and so on. And then at the same time, they're trying to sell this to us as a plan for peace, right? Which will bring us back onto what the hell is going on. There are four theories. I don't want to put those four theories. I want to give each one of them full consideration. And we may even do a little thing where we have a poll on which the four theories people find most convincing before we go in, and then a poll after I've explained each one of them as well. But anyway, there are more of these mental clips. Let's watch them.
Very, very welcome here in Downing Street. As you heard from the cheers, you
listen to the music. Listen to the music.
Have full backing across the United Kingdom. We stand with you, with Ukraine, for as long as it may take, and to achieve what we both want to achieve: a lasting peace.
Thank you very much, Keir.
Right, I just want you to imagine, okay, an old woman sitting at home. You know, this comes on. She hears the piano line. She turns to her husband. She says, ah, there he is. I love him. Bless him. Go on, Vladimir. Show the Russians what for. Now you laugh, right? You laugh at that idea. Seriously, the British public are fucking insane, okay? This is like when I say that the public is a function of the elites on this issue, I believe they are. I believe that they have been so heavily propagandized that probably upwards of 80% of normies are 100% for this. And when that piano line comes in, I can just imagine them, you know, right? That the families from Gogglebox all sitting around. Isn't it terrible what Donald Trump did to him? Oh, you know, he's been so badly abused. You know, well, I'm glad somebody's taking a stand. And I can guarantee you that Starmer was on 14% before all of this started. I bet you he's going to get a popularity bump from all of this guff. It's going to be devastating for us. It's going to be like, oh my God, how far gone is the UK? Anyway, let's carry on.
Prime Minister, happy to be here. People of the United Kingdom, such big support from the very beginning of this war. Thank you. We are very happy in Ukraine that we have such friends.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
I mean, we are literally watching North Korean level propaganda here.
The test of defence policy is always whether it keeps our country safe. But the second should be whether it improves the condition of the British people. Does it help provide the economic security that working people need? Because ultimately, that is fundamental to national security as well. So, Mark...
He's always got that bunged up nose. Working people. Working people, full force of the law. Let's carry on.
My words. We will make sure this investment maximises British jobs, British growth, British skills, and British innovation. And we should be optimistic about the...
When I first saw her this morning, I was like, bloody hell. Keir Starmer is invoking the spirit of Hermann Göring. It's like, we want guns, not butter. Guns, that's going to reinvigorate the economy. I mean, it is, like he is literally trying to sell this as an economic plan as well.
Change that it will deliver. Approach on defence. A revival of our industrial base. A deepening of our alliances. The instruments of our national power brought together, creating opportunity, assuring our allies, delivering security for our country. At moments like this in our past, Britain has stood up to be counted. It has come together and it has demonstrated strength. And that is what the security of this country needs now.
I swear I'm living in the Truman Show. This fucker is trying to start World War III and like he's invoking the other two world wars that this country started. Right, they're gearing up to do a Churchill, are they? Well, this is what we're going to be looking at for the rest of this stream. What the hell is going on? And the four theories, I think, are quite interesting. So without further ado, let me reveal them. Let me reveal the four theories, okay? The first theory is put forward by the Duran, okay? The Duran's take is literally this. Starmer is literally just putting on a show because the reality is that he can't do anything because Britain and Europe are totally irrelevant. And despite claims to the contrary in British media, Russia has simply won the war. Putin won't even agree to a ceasefire because he, as the winner of the war, holds every card and Trump knows this. Okay, that is the Duran's take. It's not one to dismiss, right? In all of this talk, in all of this theatre that we've seen the past few days, not once has anybody said, hold on a second, the Russians don't even agree to a ceasefire. Putin hasn't said a word. He's just been sitting back, presumably like chuckling to himself as he watches these clowns put on, you know, this parade. So the Duran's take is, I would say, like the hardest. I mean, it's probably the most Russia-friendly one because it assumes that Russia have won the war and that the West are simply lying or the Western media are lying. But if you watch the Duran, okay, in fact, the Duran put out a video earlier on today where they were saying, like, look, in this Telegraph paper, okay, they're making extraordinary claims for what the Ukrainian army is doing and for what the Russian, where the actual military war is. And they said, look, we have got overhead satellite images. We can see that this is not true. And yet the Telegraph still prints it. Okay. The other day when I covered that guy from MI6, the former head of MI6, he just casually mentioned on the BBC that Russia have taken 800,000 casualties. You know, I've been trying to find the source for that. And Duran mentioned similar things earlier on today. And Mercurius says there's just no source for these claims. They're claiming that the Russians took more casualties in 2024 than they did in 2022 and 2023 combined. But that is not how the course of war has gone. So somebody is lying. Either the Russians are lying or the Western media are lying. Okay. And specifically the British media are lying. Now, if I was to make a bet on who is more likely to lie, the people who lie about literally everything, the British media, or Putin, who what I like to do is I like to measure what people say and then what they do. And Putin, right, since this began, has said, if you do this, this will happen. They did that. This happened. If you do this, this will happen. If you do this, this will happen. And he stood by his word. Okay. So there's no difference between words and actions when it comes to Putin. With the Western media, I have seen the more bullshit written about this war than any other thing ever. Even more than the coup or Donald Trump, Russia Gate, or, this has been embarrassing. My favorite story, and I just want to remind you of some of the insanity we have seen, okay, from the Telegraph in particular, who are the most incredible on this, which is that the Telegraph put out the claim that Putin himself blew up Nord Stream. Right, that Putin himself blew up Nord Stream. And the reason I want to linger on that story that the Telegraph ran is to show you the sort of shit that they've been printing, okay, since this began. Lapped up by the Tory boys, Vanishing Point, Easter Gammon Worshipper, the Ghost of Kiev, and all this crap, okay? Let me just remind you of what they ran with in the Telegraph. They literally published Nord Stream sabotage mapped how Putin could have carried out the attack, and then they mocked up a picture they printed a picture of Putin in this submarine, literally going, like suggesting that Putin was going down into the sea himself to blow up his own multi-billion dollar project. So if you say to me now, who are the more likely people to lie? These people who publish this nonsense, or Putin himself? I say the British media, because that is frankly ridiculous. Anyway, let's continue. I've only just realized they didn't Photoshop that. That is an actual real picture of Putin going down in a submarine. Awesome. Anyway, so that is the first take, the Duran take, okay? The second take, and I'm going to go in more detail about each one of these in a second, apart from the first one. I'm going to go in detail about takes 2, 3, and 4, okay? Trump wants peace. Europe wants war. The Zelensky bust-up was genuine, not kayfabe, not theater, right? It was a genuine bust-up between Zelensky and Trump. The minerals deal is a tripwire designed to draw the US into World War III, and Starmer has been put there to make all of this happen. I would say this is the dominant take that goes round on the online right. I noticed David Kattan put out a video earlier on today, and this was David Kattan's line. Alistair Crook appeared on Judge Knapp earlier on, and basically this was his take as well. This, I would say, is the dominant online right take. And I was interested that Crook leaned into that more than the others. and I'll just go through the other two. We'll have a vote, and then I'll explain each one of these in much more detail, and then we'll have another vote to see which one people think is most convincing, okay? Now, the third one is by a channel called New Atlas, a chap called Brian Berletic. You may know he's a kind of bald-headed geopolitical analyst who's got this channel, New Atlas. I think he's got some sort of military background originally. And, you know, I've watched him on and off for many years. But I was particularly interested by this take he had, which is that Trump is not serious about peace, that there's basically continuity between Biden and Trump. That he put on a Punch and Judy show to trick the rubes with Zelensky, right? Noting that Zelensky was an actor, Trump's involvement in WWE and pro wrestling and so on. That the US plan is a division of labor whereby Europe is entrusted to handle Russia while the US itself focuses on China, as outlined by Pete Hegseth before the administration came in, and in a paper by the RAND Corporation, who Adam Curtis Review fans may know from Adam Curtis. The RAND Corporation are always the big villains in Adam Curtis, right? But he's got this paper by the RAND Corporation, which basically outlines exactly what has happened, basically. And the goal in this is to make Russia a vassal of the American empire. And in this analysis, the US empire has no intention of winding down, even though Trump is making it look like America's withdrawing. In fact, everything that's happening is according to the US empire's commands, right? This is Brian Berletic's take. Sounds extraordinary. Sounds a little bit 4D chess, doesn't it? Why it interests me is because Brian Berletic is typically not a schizo type. He's not one for conspiracies and things like that. And he did bring some interesting evidence to bear on this take, okay? So I want to give him a fair shake. And the fourth one is the Trump is serious about peace, and so are the Europeans. The actual goal is to rearm Europe and possibly to usher in a proper European army. All this bluster we're seeing from Starmer is to get Tory boys, liberals, and leftists to buy into increased military spending while also taking the L for now to Russia. And I put in brackets here, me sort of, because this is a take I came up with myself. And my take is based on the actions of
country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
Yes, the actions of Peter Mandelson, who is the new British ambassador to Washington. And what's really interesting is that as Starmer's been putting on all of this pageantry and Zelensky's been meeting the king and so on, Mandelson has actually been working to get the minerals deal back on track, to get to secure the ceasefire with Russia, to get Zelensky to sign on to it, and to get Trump to agree to it as well. And a lot of kind of shit-lib normie commentators have been saying, Mandelson's gone rogue. What is Mandelson doing, right? Now, a man like Peter Mandelson doesn't go rogue, guys, okay? Mandelson has not gone rogue. He is the deepest of the deep state players, right, involved here, even more so than Starmer. If anything, Mandelson would answer directly to the Dark Lord himself, right, Blair. And it strikes me that there's just no way that Mandelson is on a different page from Starmer, just no way at all. And so it strikes me that all of this stuff is basically to get a lot of leftists especially to agree to cuts in welfare in order to bolster the military, right? Which has gone down about as well as you can imagine with the likes of Aaron Bastani, right? And George Galloway and that kind of leftist. But it seems like the more liberal, the more shit-lib left, the COVID left, if you want to put it that way, are all in on it. So to me, I think that's what they're doing. And I actually think that they're trying to use this crisis, the Eurocrats, Starmer and the Eurocrats are trying to use this crisis to get a massive army, just get a massive European army, so that in 5 or 10 years' time, they can turn around and say, right, you know, America doesn't get to tell us what to do anymore. Russian, like we're gonna take a seat with the great powers, right? I think that's what they want to do, but we will see, right? So anyway, these are the four takes. I'm going to have a poll as to which of the four. I'm going to keep them on screen. I'm going to give you a moment to vote on them, and then I'm going to go through in detail. Especially Brian Beletic's take, because it requires more explanation. And I've got some maps and things for Alistair Crook's take and the online rights take. And I can speak a little bit more about my own kind of musings. I say sort of, because I'm not actually decided what I think is true yet. It's just a theory that I have, not like the theory that I have. So let's start a poll. Which take is probably true? I'm going to say one, I'm going to say two, I'm going to say three, and I'm going to say four. Now the thing is, a lot of this really depends on how literally you're taking Trump. Is Trump the genuine article, or are we being tricked again? Right? What is it? Fell for it again, award? Well, let's see. Let's start the poll. I'll just tell you, I've been in direct contact with Brian Beletic because I am extremely interested in the stuff he's been saying. The question I had for him, and he answered this directly, I said, look, why would the former head of MI6 go on air, go on the BBC's flagship news show, Newsnight, and tell millions of British people that we're exiting the unipolar moment and entering into a multipolar moment, right? Why, if what you're saying is true, and the US empire is, actually planning to try to make Russia a vassal and has no intention of going anywhere. Why is the head of MI6 saying that? And his answer was basically that is happening also because China and Russia have become more powerful, that is like a reality in the world, but that the US if it can have anything, any say in the matter at all, is going to try not to let it happen, basically. Even though Trump is making it look like it's going to happen, secretly, this is all like some sort of ruse, okay? So, yes, people are voting. The sites here, people are voting. All right. Okay, so there's about 500 people have voted, and I can exclusively reveal that before I go through them, the Durand's take is winning with 32%. The second take, 28%, is the Alastair Crook take. My take, number four, is on 25%. And rank bottom is Brian Beletic. And I had a feeling that would be the case. Now, the reason why I'm spending time on this is because Brian Beletic, is, as far as I can tell, is a serious guy. And he's taking a lot of shit for this. He's taking a lot of abuse and a lot of shit. And he's not backing down from it. And in my experience, when somebody is taking flak from all corners, like he is, at once taking flak from NAFO and from MAGA, right? From MAGA guys and from NAFO guys. That tells me that there's something, he may have something there, okay? He may be over the target, right? Or he could have just lost it. I don't know. I don't know the guy, to be honest, but I was interested in this, okay? But anyway, let's focus on, I think the Duran one is self-explanatory, right? Because the Duran one is the only take that is quite external to the situation, i.e. Russia holds all the cards. Whatever the Europeans say doesn't matter. Whatever the West says really doesn't matter, because Russia aren't going to sign in. Basically, Putin is in no mood to do any sort of deal because he's won. Because he's won, basically. That's the Duran take. Second take is, i.e., we can have all of these talks, but if Russia doesn't think that they're going to, Russia, Putin could just basically say, I could just continue and finish the war and get everything I want. I didn't need to come to the table, because why should I give anything? I've won. You've called me Hitler for the past 3 years. You've told all sorts of lies about me. You started this in the first place. And now, because you're losing so badly, you want to come to the table? Get out of it. Right? And if you've ever played Civilization, you must have been in that situation, right? You're on the brink of taking, you're on the brink of defeating some power. You've taken like 3-4 cities. You're on the brink of taking a fifth one or whatever. And they're desperate to end the war. They keep on, every two turns, they're coming in. Oh, do you want to talk? Oh, I'll give you some gold. And you're like, go away, go away, go away. And then eventually they may come in and say, all right, we'll give you all our money and the city. And you're like, okay, then, fair enough, yeah. Maybe Putin is holding out, okay? Maybe Putin is a gamer and has played lots of Civ, or more likely he has been around quite a long time and has got a real feel for genuine geopolitics, being one of the great men of this age. So here's the second one, right, from Alastair Crook. Now, I've made a couple of maps here, because when Alastair Crook is talking about tripwires, right, I made this myself. I've put in the UK flags and the French flag there. The idea is that the minerals deal that Trump is talking about, and that, you know, the one that is apparently off, is a trap, right? That the Europeans want. The idea is that if America has some interests in Ukraine, let's say civilian workers in these mineral mines or whatever, or the operations in and around this, there are going to be business people on the ground. There's going to be actual Americans there. But Trump doesn't want to pay for it. Trump doesn't want to commit American troops to the ground. He wants, right, he's not going to give any security guarantees, because so he doesn't want that. But he did say, if you listen before the flare-up, he said, well, he's all right with Britain doing it. He's all right with France doing it. He's all right if you Europeans want to put troops on the ground, knock yourselves out. I'm just interested in the minerals. America first, blah, blah, blah. Well, Alastair Crook is saying, well, you can see the problem here, right? You can see the problem, because as long as those British troops and those French troops are there, you know, any sort of contact between Russia and the Brits or Russia and France is, as per the rules of NATO, sets a trigger chain which draws in all of the other member NATO states, which would put Russia at war with all of NATO if a single Brit is hurt or if a single French soldier is struck. Okay, so this is the danger of boots on the ground. They're there as a quote-unquote peacekeeping force, but if there's any sort of contact between the Russian army and the boots on the ground, you're basically triggering World War III. Okay, so they're calling it peace, but actually it's a massive war provocation. Now, is Trump so stupid that he doesn't get this? I don't think so. I think Trump absolutely understands this, which could be like why he has broken off the deal. And I will say that if Trump goes back and signs this deal now, it will be a massive, massive cuck from Trump, right? Because it's obvious that this is a danger. And you don't need to be a genius, and Trump is a very stable genius, as we all know, to see the danger of this. There is an alternative. There's an alternative scenario that I've got here, which is that we don't even need Brits and French there. You could have like a small supervisory British battalion there, right? A token, like the ones we sent to Afghanistan and so on, right? Token, advisory. But actually the boots on the ground will be Polish and Turks. Erdogan is saying, well, I'm willing to come in on this if you let me in the EU. The Poles are raring to go. Well, how about we just put Poles and Turks on the ground? And so these are two different scenarios we could see, either directly Brits and French, or Poles and Turks as a proxy for Brits and French. Either way, the tripwire is still there, right? If a Russian attacks a Pole, or if a Russian attacks a Turk, that's still a direct attack on NATO, according to so this is what Alistair Crook is talking about. And he made a pretty convincing case. And if you listen to the rhetoric and the movies that we just watched, it does actually look like this is what they're going for. Seems fucking mental. This would also explain why Lord Mandelson is trying to get the minerals deal back on the road, right? Because the minerals deal, like, why is the minerals deal important? It's important because it gets America a foot in there. It gets America committed because there are Americans there. Okay? And again, a single hair on the head of an American, whether it's an American Chuck or an American Jamal or an American Julio, doesn't really matter. A single hair on his head is touched. And again, you got World War III. So you see, that's what the tripwire idea is. And I think it's a pretty convincing theory. The trouble is, all four of these are quite convincing theories in my book, which is why I'm doing this stream. So the best way to get the balletic one is to actually, I've cut out a 10-minute clip from the video in which he presents this, because he presents the information better than I can. So I'm just going to play his video for 10 minutes, and let's see where this takes us.
And they began the same process that they went through with Georgia. They began militarizing the country under President Donald Trump. They began actually arming Ukraine with lethal aid. And the purpose of all of this was to precipitate a proxy war the U.S. could use to extend Russia.
Now, this is a detail that Beletic is very fixated on. And in the meeting with Zelensky, Trump mentioned to Zelensky, didn't he, I gave you javelins. Remember, Obama didn't give you shit. I gave you javelins. He's talking about that 2019 deal when Trump was the president. And Beletic's point is like, well, if Trump is not just a continuity with Biden, just a different flavor of it, a blue flavor or a red flavor of exactly the same thing, why was Trump giving javelins back in 2019, right? What was going on there? If Trump isn't part of all of this? I don't know the answer to that question. You might have the answer, but I don't. I don't feel any sort of need to produce apologetics for Trump, but you might. So explain, well, what was Trump doing, giving those Trump admin approves new sale of anti-tank weapons to Ukraine. And he first approved the sale of javelins in 2017, as soon as he got in. Well, what was he up to? Anyway, let's continue.
Lethal aid. And the purpose of all of this was to precipitate a proxy war the U.S. could use to extend Russia. We know that because there's literally a policy paper titled Extending Russia from 2019, published by the Rand Corporation. If you read the reports, it was commissioned by the U.S. Army, and it is meant to advise the U.S. government in foreign policy. And in the table of contents, under geopolitical measures, it says provide lethal aid to Ukraine as measure number one. You can also see increased support to the Syrian rebels, promote regime change in Belarus, exploit tensions in the South Caucasus, reduce Russian influence in Central Asia, challenge Russian presence in Moldova. Every single one of these recommendations has been attempted or are ongoing right now as we speak. So are all of the economic measures: hinder petroleum exports, reduce natural gas exports, hinder pipeline expansion. The U.S. literally blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. And that was after President Trump, during his first administration, began placing sanctions on the pipeline while it was under construction. And that it included on European companies as well as Russian companies. So I hope you can see where I'm going with all of this. This is why Russia reacted. They could see that the exact same process the U.S. went through with Georgia was now taking place in Ukraine. Ukraine with a much larger population, much more powerful military to begin with, and then a military from 2014 to 2022 that was constantly getting larger, was better organized, was receiving more and more equipment and also weapons under the Trump administration, weapons from the U.S. It was becoming an unignorable threat to Russian national security. And Russia launched its special military operation. Just as they responded to the threat posed by Georgia, they were responding to the same threat the U.S. created in Ukraine. And this was a threat that was created.
I should probably explain that there's about 10 or 15 minutes before this that I cut out, where he actually says, like, look, you have to zoom out a little bit and show that the U.S. has done this reset, provocation, betrayal, reset, provocation, betrayal thing with Russia about two or three times already. And he goes all the way back to 1994. And then he goes through the George W. Bush era, Hillary Clinton, Obama's time. Now we're moving into Trump 1 and Biden sort of time. But this is part of his thing that you have to like zoom out a bit and just see the pattern that this keeps on happening when, you know, the America kind of doesn't quite get what it wants. It goes back to a reset, tries to build trust, betrays, then does it all over again. But anyway, let's continue.
Over the course of the Bush, Obama, Trump, the first Trump administration, the Biden administration, and now here we are with another term with President Trump in office. So for the last 3 years, I have covered the Russian special military operation in Ukraine, and I have laid out the fact that it is a war of attrition that Russia is winning. The U.S. has exhausted its arms and ammunition it had to spare for Ukraine. It is incapable of expanding the production of arms and ammunition quickly enough to sustain Ukraine's fighting capacity. And so the U.S. has once again hit a brick wall. They are at an impasse. And what they need is not peace. There's no evidence or precedent of wanting peace. They need time. They are trying to buy time. And just as Secretary of State Hillary Clinton did back in 2009 with the reset, we see under the Trump administration a new reset being offered to the Russians. And just like the one in 2009, this is a ploy to buy time. And I can only surmise that Russia would ever accept such a deal if they also desperately needed to buy time and they felt, honestly, they could use that time better than the Americans and the Europeans. That is the precedent. That is the precedent that we have indicating American intentions from this point onward. What about the actual evidence? Now, a lot of people are imagining that something has suddenly changed. Not only has the Trump administration openly, publicly stated that they are just buying time, do you recall this from U.S. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, President Trump's Secretary of Defense? This is what he said in Brussels.
We also face a peer competitor in the communist Chinese with the capability and intent to threaten our homeland and core national interests in the Indo-Pacific. The U.S. is prioritizing deterring war with China in the Pacific, recognizing the reality of scarcity and making the resourcing trade-offs to ensure deterrence does not fail. As the United States prioritizes its attention to these threats, European allies must lead from the front. Together, we can establish a division of labor that maximizes our comparative advantages in Europe and Pacific, respectively. We ask each of your countries to step up on fulfilling the commitments that you have made. And we challenge your countries and your citizens to double down and recommit yourselves, not only to Ukraine's immediate security needs.
That language, by the way, double down, very interesting, because that was the exact language that Keir Starmer used in his speech yesterday. He used the exact phrase, double down. Let's carry on.
But to Europe's long-term defense and deterrence goals. Safeguarding European security must be an imperative for European members of NATO. As part of this, Europe must provide the overwhelming share of future lethal and non-lethal aid to Ukraine. Members of this contact group must meet the moment. This means donating more ammunition and equipment, leveraging comparative advantages, expanding your defense industrial base.
How do you listen to that and draw the conclusion that the U.S. actually wants some sort of lasting peace or conclusion to this conflict, and that they're not just trying to freeze the conflict using the Europeans while they need to pivot to Asia and address a rapidly rising China? The very fact that the U.S. is openly saying they need to pivot to China, they need to end the conflict in Ukraine because they need to pivot to China, tells you that nothing has actually fundamentally changed about U.S. foreign policy. It's still pursuing global dominance. It has lost the proxy war in Ukraine. It needs to buy time, and it needs to address China first and foremost. And then once that is completed, they will circle back to Russia, just as they have done all throughout this timeline that I've showed you, from 1994 all the way up to 2025. Two full cycles have been completed where the U.S. pushed extreme aggression and encroachment on Russia, reached a brick wall, resetted, and then began the process all over again. Two full cycles now, and now we are preparing to enter the third. And then we remember after Secretary Hegseth made his comments in Brussels, there was about a week or so where the United States, President Trump, Vice President Vance, Elon Musk, all took turns berating and belittling and insulting and mocking Europe. And Europe, in turn, stomped its feet and held its breath. But after about a week of what is in actuality just theater, Europe complied to Secretary Hegseth's directives 100%.
I can announce that a new 3.5 billion euro payment for Ukraine will arrive already in March. Second, as President Costa just has announced, there will be a special European Council, and I will present at this special European Council a comprehensive plan for defense investment, for scaling up our European arms production and defense capabilities, but also for investment in Ukraine's defense industry, scaling up your arms production, your defense capabilities. So this will be a plan for the European Union and for Ukraine.
So U.S. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth tells Europe they're going to expand arms shipments to Ukraine. They're going to literally double down on Ukraine. They're also tasked with expanding their military industrial production. And that is exactly what the EU has now announced they are doing. The US told Europe what to do, and then Europe did it.
Now, you hear what he said at the end there. The US told Europe what to do, and they're like, you hear the direct orders from Hegseth, and then they literally did exactly what he said. Okay? I.e. exactly what Donald Trump wants, which is Europe paying for its own defense and stepping up in the Ukraine war. Now, in Balletic's analysis, as you heard there, everything that we see in front of the cameras, including the bust-up between Zelensky and Trump, the Elon Musk and J.D. Vance having a go at European leaders about a month ago or so on, is all basically theater to sell the rubes, right? It has a dual purpose, a dual purpose. In America, and for the MAGA crowd, obviously Vance, Trump, Elon Musk are baby faces, right? Who basically sell them the idea that they are no longer paying for the Ukraine war, okay? Oh, the Europeans are paying for it themselves now. We're not paying for it anymore. I did listen to a couple of like longer form streams with Balletic. He was on some other channel, which I watched, which is where I first came across this idea of his. And he argued that the Americans will end up paying for it, but they'll do it like round the back door. So they'll, like, I don't know, sell arms to Poland, let's say, or they'll give arms to Poland, and then Poland will sell them to Ukraine. So it won't, there'll be like a kind of at least one stage of remove, so it doesn't look like they're directly funding it. Okay, that's the first part. And then the second part is selling this whole plan to the European public, to the British public, you know, the rubes on the other hand, you know, here, the shitlib rubes especially, who then, you know, oh, Donald Trump has turned on Zelensky. We need to step up. We need to step up. But that basically is literally Hegseth's plan, according to Balletic. Difficult to argue, given that all this stuff was written down by the Rand Corporation 5 years ago, and that Hegseth, you know, laid it all out, and now it's happening in this way. That's why I was interested by the theory, because kind of there's a lot of pointers there that suggest that some element of this could be true. And then finally, Trump is serious about peace, and so are the Europeans. The goal is to rearm and possibly to usher in proper European army. Now, you'll notice that these aren't completely mutually exclusive, right? I am taking for read Durand's point that Russia has won the war, okay? And realistically, it's like, well, they can talk all about this, but I think they're serious about wanting to bring an end to the war because they know the war is lost. But the upshot of it all is that we get this big... I think the Europeans, Starmer and so on, have got designs on a big European army. They think that they, especially while Trump is in, they can get this under the auspices of opposing Trump. They're actually doing what Trump wants. They can actually get their long-term ambition of the big European army. Okay. Now, I will run the poll again. I will run the poll again to see if the results are the same or different. Did anybody change their mind? And then I'll take some super chats and things and we'll get out of here. So which theory is most convincing? I'll do it again. 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's see. See if anybody changed their mind. See, I find this very difficult because they all seem true, but they can't all be true. Yeah, 1 and 3. Yeah, let's have a look. How are things going now? Okay, now Balletic has had a chance to speak for himself. It's a lot closer than it was. And we're looking at an exactly even quarter split between them all, with Durand still winning slightly Okay, I'll end it now. We're about the same. Look at that. Well, now we're on exactly quarters. Everybody's on quarter. My theory has jumped into second place. Durand's is still winning. But, yeah, quite incredible, really. Why I think that the Durand one is ultimately winning is because the Durand one is based on a hard reality that supersedes everything else that we've talked about, i.e. it almost doesn't matter what any of these people do, including Trump, because Russia's won. But we will see, because, I mean, as I just about to come on air, there was the fifth option, which I didn't put on, that was put forward by the Tory boy, Vanishing Point, the Tory boy extraordinaire, has said, oh, look, what about number five? Number five, a deal is agreed between Trump and Ukraine. Putin rejects the deal. Trump accelerates the war and sanctions until Putin accepts and Putin capitulates. So the boy's got in his head, i.e. none of the above, but that scenario right there. So there we are. I was hoping this stream would help me figure out which one I thought was true. I have to say, Beletic is very convincing in his explanation. And it's one of those things that ever since I saw it, I can't unsee it. And I can't kind of... I can't go back to like believing in the magic again. It's like somebody showing you the magic trick and how it works. But we will see. We will see. Because I also... It's hard to believe that Trump is bullshitting on something as massive as this. Then again, last night I started looking through a book I bought many years ago called How Trump Thinks by Peter Oborn, which is basically just a book looking through Trump's tweets and things like that, published in 2017. But at the back of that, it's got an appendix where it basically just reproduces all of the books that Donald Trump has ever published and the blurbs from the back of them, what they're about, okay? Not just Art of the Deal. Trump has published about 20 books. Most of them are ghostwritten, of course, or have a co-author. And unfortunately, it reminded me that for at least three decades, Trump was basically a kind of how to get rich, kind of, you know, how to win friends and influence your uncle kind of peddler of, you know, like, how can I put this? Like, he wasn't actually the sort of figure that you'd he was like kind of a scam artist in a way. And just flicking through that book made me think, this guy's always been a little bit of a sleazeball, hasn't he, Trump? And because I've been thinking about all of this, I was then thinking, well, if we found out that all this was a ruse, would we be that surprised? I mean, he knows how pro wrestling works. He knows how TV works because he was on The Apprentice for, you know, 15 years. And he's written all these really scummy books. I know the titles of Trump books are things like "You Too Could Be Rich, Here's How" and things like that. I mean, it really is kind of like kind of sub Tony Robbins level self-help stuff, you know. So the ultimate question is Trump on the level? The question would be, if Beletic is untrue, how do you explain away the fact that what Hegseth said is exactly what has happened? And if Trump was serious about peace, my question is, why is Pete Hegseth talking about keeping the war going and Europe committing, you know, doubling down on their commitment to Ukraine, quote unquote? This would explain incongruities. Like, for example, it was notable that Marco Rubio was sitting there. I don't know why they call him little, because he looks like quite a big fella, Rubio, to be honest. At least he does to me. He's quite a like wide-shouldered guy, isn't he? But he had like a face like thunder there, right? And I was thinking, well, Rubio is a noted kind of neocon, and he was 100% for the Ukraine thing. Now, if you see Beletic as being on the money, that explains that. Why did Trump pick a guy like Marco Rubio if he was really wanted to end the war and side with the Russians? So, and if it was just theater, Rubio was selling it, right? He was selling it. Why did a sleazeball of the ultimate untrustworthy person, Lindsey Graham, why is he not freaking out? Why is he going along with it? If it's not kayfabe. And the more I've thought about it, the more I've thought there's something to this, you know, there's something to it. On the other hand, the rhetoric from Starmer is fucking disconcerting, I tell you that much. And the tripwire scenario outlined by Alistair Crook is really disconcerting. And it really, on the face of things, it looks like that is what is happening. Which isn't actually contradictory. These two theories, if you think about it, Beletic and Crook, are not actually contradictory, right? The only bit that's contradictory is that Trump is on the level. The outcomes are actually the same here. The Beletic explanation and the Crook explanation are identical, with the single caveat that in Beletic's version, Trump is basically working with everybody else, and in the Crook version, Trump is on the level. That's very interesting to me. Crook was former MI6, of course. So, I mean, certainly by the logic of realism, the John Mearsheimer, I've been reading a lot of Mearsheimer recently. I want to make a video on his book, The Great Powers, or the Tragedy of Great Powers, which I hope to do next week. And I also have another book, How States Think. So I've been reading Mearsheimer directly. Lots of really fascinating stats in these books by Mearsheimer. But like, according to Mearsheimer's realist analysis, no power willingly downgrades itself. Power always looks to expand. Power always looks to eliminate rival castles. Okay. And so it's like, well, Donald Trump now is going to become the president and deliberately downsize the empire. Do we believe that Donald Trump wants to do that? So it ultimately becomes a question on faith. Well, we'll see what happens, I guess. We'll see what happens. Let me know your thoughts in the chat. Let me know your thoughts in the comments. I think it's a fascinating question. And we may have all the answers, because I saw that Trump tweeted earlier on that either tonight or tomorrow night, something big, he's going to reveal the truth or whatever that means. Now, you could say that the British Empire willingly downgraded, etc. There's some truth to that, but there's also truth in the Shadow Empire stuff as well. I've got a book here called Britain's Empires by James Hartfield. I mean, you're watching it in action. All this bullshit with Starmer that we're seeing right now, that is the that is part of that as well. But anyway, let us hit some super chats before we get out of here. Hate speaker Sargon of a Cat says, AA, drop that weight, big boy. You're looking like an American. Carl did it. I know you can. Well, I mean, I have been going to the gym every day. I was at the gym earlier on, and I was yesterday. So there's only so much I can do. It's been kidding me. I've been doing cardio, which I absolutely fucking hate. There's a lot of things I don't like about going to the gym. The whole faff around getting the logistics of getting changed kind of and little things like the boomer behavior in the locker rooms and so on kind of bug me. But yeah, I have been going, I mean, every other day, basically. Although it just so happens today and yesterday morning, I went back to back because I was on the wrong days. I'm trying to get back to Monday, Wednesday, etc. Esoteric Elderman says, I just wrote an article on the history of the UK as a spoiler of European peace. It's very deep in the psyche, and I'm afraid at what will happen. I can't send a link on the super chat. It's in the chat. I'll put it again. Okay, Esoteric Elderman, if you post it now, if you're still there, I can put it up on the screen. I can put it up on the screen. I can't. He's not here now, I don't think. Somebody's saying if AA loses weight, you look like Zelensky again. Well, the thing is that I did fast for a year, if you don't forget. I fasted for a year, and now I do exercise as well. And on the day of the Zelensky thing, Mrs. AA kept on saying, "You look like Zelensky," because I had my hair cut. He's like, "You look like you look especially like Zelensky today. Is that why you're so angry about it? Is that why you know? I was like, "What? I don't like bloody Zelensky." So she loves to wind me up. No, I didn't fast. I did intermittent fasting for a year. I did, 16-8 for an entire year. Good results for the first 6 months. And then kind of for the last 6 months, it just kind of, you know, I was like, oh, I need to do something else now because it kind of plateaued, in my opinion. Yeah, let's carry on. I mean, it's not just about weight, though. I'm doing cardio to get in shape, to get my fitness up. You know, as a man of advancing age now in my 40s, I need to make sure I've got a good tear and all of that. So I'm, you know, I'm making sure I don't get, like, horrendously unfit. I'm working back up to doing my Blaze, which is the boxing, the weights, and the, you know, it's high-intensity training. But, you know, I'm not as fit as I was 4 years ago, so I'm building back up to going to my Blaze sessions, if you must know. let's carry on. I still can't see their article by Esoteric Elderman. Captain Smith says, Zelensky couldn't stick to the narrative. Russia started the war in 2022, but actually they break ceasefires before then. They bombed us relentlessly, but our cities are doing great, and you should come and visit, Donald. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? That was interesting. PS says, the Rat King just said, end of the war, very, very far away. Claims the US will just ignore his behavior. It's almost like he's trying to get all aid and support cut off from the US. David Brinkerhoff says, option 3 is Boomer Truth approved, in which Russia is the new mid-century German regime and China is the new Japanese empire. Mm-hmm. Peter Boken says, I would like to point out the timeline differences of these scenarios. I'll put the scenarios back up on the screen if people have joined us late or whatever. Here we go. There are the four scenarios. He says the Durand analysis scenarios are short-term ones. Meanwhile, Brian one is a long-term one. Deep state one may span years, waiting out Putin, who is 72. Yeah, that's true. I mean, mine is a long-term projection as well. I honestly think the regime is thinking like 10 years down the line, 15 years down the line. Why do I say that? Because it's clear to everybody that Britain, France, etc. are in no fit state to field armies at the minute. That's why they're remilitarizing. But that's going to take 10 to 15 years. If you look at the state of the British Army, its equipment, its fleet, the naval fleet, its recruitment numbers, it's going to take a long time to get back up and running. Manufacturing capacity as well. Matty G says, Russia won't stop at demanding gold and cities for peace. He'll also demand knowledge of military tradition so we can build Cossacks. America should only consider that if Russia doesn't have saltpeter. Yeah. Art Dino says, we have entered the world foretold by prophets like Burnham, Orwell, and Mackinder, where the primary powers are Eurasian Russia and East Asian China commanding the world island, opposed to Oceanic America ruling the rim. There's a lot. I mean, that there's a lot of Mackinder. This is very Mackinder, all of this. It's so Mackinder. Clean Puss says, Ukraine will be remilitarized in accordance with new borders. The UK will play a key role in this due to prior obligations. Kiev's rhetoric is simply designed to pretend this is democratically supported. Yeah, that's not bad. Not a bad take either. I don't really understand why this country is so involved in this, though, or why it should be Britain leading, or like fucking why? Just let the country have a little time out, like I said, but our leaders just will not let that happen for some reason. Esoteric Elderman says, the issue is that if your vassals pay for their own defense, they're harder to control, and Europe becomes a rival castle again. Yes, you see, this is, in my analysis, Esoteric Elderman, which is option four here, I think that's what the Europeans are up to. I think they see an opportunity to get back on the map, to get back at the table, to be a major power, which is what the EU Eurocrats have always wanted. And if you remember, Ukraine initially was a way of driving a wedge between Germany and Russia, destroying Nord Stream, and bringing Europe massively back under control. But now they're doing this rearming business. That's not a great idea, really. You're literally producing a rival castle in this. So this is the US Empire's idea, it's not very far-sighted, I'll tell you that much. Thomas Glindour says, I think option four is likely, but the situation could easily get out of hand and snowball into a hot war with Russia, whether Europe or the US want to or not. Exactly. Exactly. And in fact, now I'm looking at it, it's possible that all four of these options are simultaneously true, apart from the one contradiction here, which is on whether Trump wants peace or not, right? But really, that's a kind of side question. Much more important is all four of these have some element of truth to them, don't they? Just on slightly different timelines. CCP says, every day of the SMO is another phase in the Orthodox exorcism of West Z, or Z, I should say. Shaman McLamey says, Trump doesn't want to destroy the gay. He wants to reorientate it to more explicitly serve the core and offshore expense for the empire to the satrapies. I mean, that would accord with what Hexeth wanted as well. The thing is, though, like I said, if they're paying for their own military, then they become more of a rival castle. You know, another empire that had that policy of places paying for their own defense was the British Empire. When the British Empire embarked on its policy of making the vassals pay for themselves, which they did do in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, and that was the beginning of the end of the empire, because it wasn't long before nationalist movements sprung up and we got a bunch of independences after that point. Because, well, I've got an army now. You're basically running, like, what are you giving us again, Brits? Why are you here again? Oh, I just think we'll run into ourselves, thanks. I mean, it's just kind of natural that you can see the thought process. It's like, well, if you're not occupied by the army, or if you're paying for yourself, then you're not really part of the empire anymore, are you? Realistically. So, I guess what I'm saying is that empires cost a lot of money, right? But that is the price of having an empire. That's what I was trying to explain in my various Monday videos recently, where I've been talking about these sorts of issues, about Trump actually representing the downwinding of the US empire, because it could be that this is their plan now. That was also the British Empire's plan. But though, like, plans have a habit of backfiring, especially when it comes to emboldening vassals. Have you ever played Crusader Kings 2, right? It's a tricky balancing act, isn't it? You've got your you've got all of these earls and dukes under your command. You can't make any one of them too powerful, though, or have a too large an army, or they might revolt. Yeah? That's why I put William the Conqueror as an S-tier king. Because what William the Conqueror did is he basically fragmented the entire map of the UK, abolished duchies. There were no duchies, right? Only little baronies and earldoms and so on in the kingdom. Then he made sure that nobody had like contiguous. You're like, well, you can have these two baronies, but they're like 200 miles apart. Or you can have those two or three, but they're miles apart. And he made sure that there was a balance and nobody was too powerful, which made him, as the king, pretty strong, right? Now as history develops, as the feudal era develops, all of that, what William the Conqueror, that careful balance that he set up, became undone. And then eventually, when you get to the War of the Roses, you've got somebody like Warwick the Kingmaker, who's literally more powerful than the king, who literally has the power to make or break kings. So, and what I'm saying is the dynamic of having an empire is the same. It's like, well, okay, you can have your own army. But you see, with that, the vassal's power rises. And as their power rises, they become more of a threat, more of a rival castle. Very tricky balancing act. This is how empires fall apart, ultimately. Dr. Metropolis says, Trump knows Putin won. Trump is business. The war and NATO are bad for business. I don't buy that he's in continuity with Biden and the deep state. Yeah. See, the thing is that I really do believe that when Trump was saying, oh, you know, a stupid, I believe that he genuinely hates Obama, that he genuinely hates Biden and so on and so forth. But you see, what you've got to understand is that there are US interests, quote unquote, that exist apart from Biden or Trump or whoever is in office, independently almost of the government. This is an odd part of realist analysis, right? How States Think by Mia Shimer talks about this, and Beletic is thinking in these terms as well. He's like, look, it doesn't really matter who's there. The US is not going to willingly allow Russia to expand its power at the expense of US power. It wants to crush a rival castle and make Russia a vassal to it. Regardless of what any single person there wants, that is the kind of quote-unquote interest of the US enterprise, if you want to put it that way. So, you know, it's kind of... What I'm saying is there can be continuities between Trump and Biden with those two actually hating each other as well. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know, though, because I remember it was all smiles and stuff during the transition, wasn't it? So there was a brief moment there where Biden was a babyface, if you remember. He wore the red hat. Anyway, Franey Sustik says, why would the Eurolibs want an army? They aren't even defending its borders and its people. Is it that they want to be free to be loony despite the US, or is it that they just want to grow the Western army? Well, it doesn't really matter what the Eurolibs think they want. They will do as they're told, basically. They're just getting a firmware update. Don't ask them why. They're just going to support this no matter what. But the elites, who are their, who are these people that we're seeing here? They've always wanted a European army. So it's been something they accused Nigel Farage of lying about during Brexit. Richard Phillips says the USA wants EU, Russia, Ukraine as cannon fodder, war, billions to the military-industrial complex. EU will never be a geopolitical rival problem, and the deal peace is theatre. That's another take, I suppose. See, the thing is that this could all happen with that being true until it's not true. If they allow that EU army to get too big, for example, right? Then it will become a geopolitical problem, as I just outlined. Bomb Shelter says, all can be true. The US wants to focus on China or itself. The EU wants an army, but knows right now they are useless and needs US. Trump doesn't care about Ukraine's fate as long as the US isn't involved, etc. Yeah, I mean, as I've been looking at these, over the course of this hour or so, I have come to the conclusion that they're not actually mutually, they could all actually be true at the same time, with the one foundations of logic fans, right? One of the foundational elements of logic is that so you can't be in two places at once, or two contradictory things cannot be true. There is actually a contradiction in them, which is the question of Trump, whether Trump wants peace or he does not want peace. That is, I guess we only know, only Donald Trump will know that in his own heart, I guess. We can't look into that. But, all of the other details could actually be, they could all be true at the same time. Matt McKenna says, the only way I can think of explaining away Hegseth's words is that he was trying to deliver the news in a more digestible way for the Europeans. Yeah, but he gave a command. And the command was, double down on your support for Ukraine and increase your military budget. Because you're ultimately going to have to deal with this. Why didn't he say, listen, Russia's won the war. We're going out. You guys can do what you want. Didn't say that, did he? Shaman McLaney says, neolibs want the core to serve the empire. Trump wants the empire to serve the core. Trump may downsize the empire if it secures his power and goals. Yeah, it's possible. It's possible, but the thing is that is taking a lot of things on face value. And what I find increasingly in the new era, while Trump is the president here, and his base is very rabid and so on and so forth, is that I'm increasingly asked to take things on their face value, right? Like I'm asked to believe that J.D. Vance had a genuine road to Damascus moment and has been red-pilled by reading, anon tweets on Twitter. I'm asked to believe that with a straight face. I am being asked to believe that everything that we saw play out, right, there was no element of scripting involved. It was all just genuine and organic. And I'm increasingly being asked to believe that, okay? I.e., there's no kayfabe, AA. Everything you see in politics is real. That's what I'm being asked to believe. What did I say the other week? We weren't all born yesterday. And Trump, in particular, is someone who knows pro wrestling. So that's all I'll keep on saying. Why am I increasingly asked to believe, to take everything on face value? I got a bridge to sell you too. Redacted Brainwave says, what if Trump is an actual Putin agent scenario? Oh yes, there is that. I left that off because there is that scenario as well, which is very big on LBC, incidentally, where they're convinced in some parts of shit-dead media that Trump just is an outright like Putin sycophant and just love being paid off, or just loves Putin. There's another angle that I didn't talk about that some people are interested in, which is that, of course, if Trump is not a Putin agent, that's fine. But We do know that there is another country, a little country in the Middle East, that he does have a special love and affection for, and that he kind of, you know, seemed like very, very kind of meek and subservient when Netanyahu was in town, didn't he? And there is an angle whereby all of this that we're seeing is to do with that. And this comes down to the rather ambiguous relationship between Israel and Russia itself. Now, let's ask ourselves a question. Why did BAP, I'm talking about Bronze Age Pervert, who, whether you love him or hate him, seems like he's pretty up for that little country in the Middle East. I think that's kind of been revealed now, right? Why did he have Russians with Attitude on so regularly? Question. Why are all those guys, all that sphere, pro-Israel, but also pro-Russia? Question to be asked. I don't know the answer. I haven't looked into it myself. But when I'm listening to Odyssey tonight with my favorite racist that I listen to on Odyssey, I suspect some of them will be asking that question, and maybe we'll get some answers. Maybe next week, if I find anything out, I'll share it with you. There's an angle there. There is an angle. I don't know what it is yet. Russia decides not to defend Syria. Then Israel goes in and bombs the shit out of all the Syrian stuff. Something. But I don't know what. Basque dude says, is it willingly grand downgrading the empire, realizing that expanding the empire to Ukraine is a lost cause, that Ukraine and NATO will never happen? Yeah, I mean, that is the elephant in the room as well. And it really does seem like there's a split between assessments on whether Russia has won the war or not. The British establishment especially is convinced that the war has gone terribly for Russia, and that they're on the brink of collapse. Just 2 more weeks and Russia's going to collapse. We keep on being told this in our press here. Whereas over in Judge Knapp land and on Duran land, Russia has won the war convincingly. What's true? Let me tell you, friends, I've never been to Ukraine. I don't spend all my time on Telegram looking at maps. So the truth is, I don't know. All I know is that our media lies about everything. And these other people sometimes tell the truth. So there we go. On the other hand, there are people who appear on some of those channels. Like, let me give you the most blatant example. Scott Ritter, right? Scott Ritter has got so many things wrong in the past year or 2 years that I'm surprised that they still have him on. And Judge Knapp never pulls him up on it. Nobody ever pulls Ritter up on the shit he's got wrong. What's a huge thing that Ritter got wrong? I mean, you could take your pick any given week. But the biggest thing he got wrong was on Assad. Like the day it was happening, or a day before, he was like, oh yeah, the Lion of Damascus will be back. You don't just worry, you know, they're going to get crushed, blah, blah, blah. And then Assad fell. Duran guys, in fairness to them, were pretty quick on that story. And they were like, oh no, there's things aren't going well in Syria. We're hearing from our friends in Moscow, etc. Whereas Ritter, who has to be closer to some of those regimes than the Duran are, right? Because he's actually there. And he, I mean, you know, he streams, he does about 20 streams a week. Does he get paid? I don't know. How does he survive, this guy? But anyway, Ritter, I don't trust. So there are people who appear on the, who appear on those shows who don't always tell the truth as well. And me, I'm value free. I just have to, you see, this is the thing. You have to make, everybody propagandizes, right? You have to make margin calls all the time. What did I do? I just kind of phased Ritter out. I was like, well, I'm just going to skip his shows because chances are he's going to be bullshit to me. I have not found that with some of the other people I still listen to regularly. Alistair Crook is very often on the money, for example. So, you know, pays your money and you take your choice, I guess. Bloodbase says removing cancer is technically downsizing. Yeah, that's true. Harry Johnson says, I have yet to meet a person who would sign up for an EU army. Those who like the idea are functional women who want others to die in the trenches. Well, I would like to see all of the NAFO guys get conscripted. And all of those people who are just as British as you, and non, I'd like to see them get conscripted as well. But anyway, we can all dream, can't we? I mean, wouldn't it be amazing if all the NAFO guys signed up and only to get, you know, the Reddit battalion, the world's first Reddit battalion? All right, let's carry on. Joe's Garage says that amazing Trump stick ad showed how he thinks. Rain Sustick says you misunderstood me. Do the Euro elites want an army to be better servants or to break free ultimately? Frayne, I think ultimately they want to break free, or at the very least be able to stand up to America. And I think that there's always been a European core who wants that. Goes all the way back to De Gaulle in France and to people like Michael Heseltine in this country. Right? There's always been voices who want to be more supine to the Americans, and there's voices who are more kind of like, no, realistically, the time of France standing alone or Germany standing alone or Britain standing alone against these massive superpowers now are over. But if we all combined our resources, Europe as a block is actually bigger than America. It's got a bigger economy than America. It could have a bigger army than America. That has always been the kind of Heseltine argument, the De Gaulle argument, and various other people have thought in that sort of way as well. I mean, even people like Julius Evola, do you remember I had that video, was like Evola up for the EU? Well, he's got that essay on the two eagles, right? This is a lot of people have had this idea because it's basic geopolitics, right? It's like, well, in the era of America, China, and Russia, can't just have little, like, you can't have Britain ruling the waves with an army of 600,000 people anymore. It's just not big enough. And this is ultimately what people like Richard Spencer want as well. Alex Travonik has just sent some money. Thank you very much. Frayne says Ritter is a demented third worldist at this point. Ritter has lost it. I don't know what's happened to him, but he. Like, if he was ever good, he's not been good for a while now. O2 Tom says, excellent work as per usual, EA, keep it up. Cringe Walker says, considering the EU, I'd respect Ritter more if he just came out and said, look, that shit I was telling you last week, it didn't come true when I got it wrong. Right? But he's clearly not, for quite a long time, he's clearly not, he's been doing propaganda and not analysis. I don't know why that is. Don't know why that is. Somebody needs to ask him. Cringe Walker says, considering the EU gets most of its intelligence from the US and Israel, being convinced Russia is about to fall might be from trusting propaganda too hard. Well, Cringe Walker, as I've learned more and more about these situations, there is a rather large intelligence agency in London, namely MI6, of James Bond fame. And it does seem I mean, I don't want to come over all stormy waters and Tom Luongo on you guys, but it does seem that MI6 are behind an awful lot of stuff that goes on. Whether they're working in conjunction with the CIA or not, it's not always clear. But, for example, Russiagate was blatantly MI6. Now, why isn't it a massive diplomatic incident that MI6 directly tried to interfere in the American election? I don't know the answer to that question. I honestly don't. But clearly, they punch above their weight. And as we're seeing with the current scenario, Britain appears to punch above its weight. Why, when Keir Starmer said, everybody come to London, let's have this big shindig where we all glad hand and give Zelensky hugs. Why did all the European leaders jump when Starmer was like, come on over. Aren't we meant to be out of the EU now? So why is everybody still listening to Britain? Why didn't the EU say, why didn't Ursula von der Leyen say, well, hold on a second, Britain's not in the EU, so fuck off, Starmer. We'll do our own conference. We'll do our own shindig with Zelensky. We'll host it in Brussels. That didn't happen. It happened in London. I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer. Why are the Europeans allowing Starmer to make himself the face of this? There's something there. If I was to, you know, put on my tinfoil hat, as I said, as per my theory here, I think it's because ultimately Starmer and friends want the EU army to happen, and they ultimately want to take us back in and lead the EU. Possibly because old Darth Sidious in the background still wants to fulfill his lifetime ambition of being the president of Europe. Alex Travonik says, don't forget that Israel asked Russia to keep their bases in Syria. Yes, they did. There's some angle between Israel and Russia that I don't know about because I've not looked into it and I don't even know where to start looking. There's a lot of things that are opaque there. There's a lot of history between Israel and Russia, not all of which I understand. There's a lot of Russians in Israel. Were they kicked out? Do they hate the Russians? I don't know. There's an angle, like, why does Victoria Nuland hate Russia so much? I don't know. I don't know what the split there is. It's not my speciality area, right? I will try to find out, though, because that is another thing that could tie all these things together. Because ultimately, if Trump answers to anyone, it's to that little country in the Middle East, as we all know, who wanted him there. Remember, my regime wanted Trump. Well, when I was talking about that, I was talking about that faction in particular. That faction in particular wanted Trump there. Why? What are they up to? I don't know. Don't know the answer. And I think that is all of the super chats, unless I've missed any. I did miss some the other day. Oh, Coney, the current year, says, why do you want to play pickleball? It's an old person's game. Because, Coney, I've got dreams of going in there, a young buck at 42, and there being a bunch of like middle-aged women and so on there. And do you remember Bill Murray in Kingpin? Right, he goes and he just wrecks the kids at bowling. Like, I've got dreams of just going in and dominating and winning a pickleball like Bill Murray in Kingpin and celebrating statically and wildly. Unfortunately, I can't get into pickleball. Like I said, it's like a secret society from Eyes Wide Shut. I can't get in for love nor money. And when I ask people, when I'm in the jacuzzi, I said, have you played that pickleball? They just look, they kind of look around shiftily, and they're like, then they start laughing to themselves. Oh, you want to play pickleball, huh? Do you remember in American Psycho, where he wants to get into the Four Seasons? Hey, I'd like a table at the Four Seasons. That's me trying to get into pickleball. Everywhere I look, I just want one game of pickleball. Look at the rube. Look at the new boy. You're never getting into pickleball, Parvini. That's what they say to me. Okay, there we are. there's a few more. Here is the article from Esoteric Elderman. He's found a way to get it through. I'll just share my screen. And this is Perfidious Albion, The Eternal Spoiler by Esoteric Alderman. You can get to his, you can see it there on Substack. And it's the article with a picture of King John there, Prince John from Robin Hood. what else have we got? Daniel Robinson. Furthermore, Kissinger made comments in 2012 that in 10 years Israel would be over. Pope Francis took over a year later, so it seems that the global UN global government may still have a plan but run from Ukraine. Okay, interesting. Look at the Heavenly New Jerusalem project led by the oligarch Igor Bukat. The old globalist plan was to put the UN capital to rule in Jerusalem. But in 2012, it seems that changed to Kyiv. Narco Republican says some people argue that the EU is attempting to build a fourth Reich. Some theories go in that direction. But what about Trump? Is there any chance he would leave Europe holding the bag in a war with Russia? Well, you see, I think if you come back to the Alistair Crook theory, the tripwire theory, right? The thing is, whether Trump wanted it or not, if a single British soldier gets killed by a single Russian bullet, NATO is committed under the NATO doctrine. So unless Trump preemptively pulls America out of NATO, which would just be the end of NATO, that is the plan, basically, according to Crook anyway. So. All right. There we go. Hopefully that was a good stream. I've done three of these one-off special streams now. In years to come, I want people to call it the Ukraine Trilogy, right? The Ukraine Trilogy. These three streams, special one-off streams. They've done some pretty good numbers, but if I could always stream as frequently as this, I would, but I can't. And I have a family. I've got a schedule to keep to. I just managed to get special dispensation due to the impending threat of World War III. All right. Do pick up a course at the academic agency. The promo code Mandy will still work for about half an hour.
Country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and
promo code Mandy, 25% off all courses. Come on down, Academic Agency. Every single course, 25% off. Promo code Mandy.
Country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.